101.5 on your FM dial, New York.
Okay, this is Joe Franklin broadcasting on radio station WBAI.
It's 99.5% all natural and preservative free. WBAI FM in New York.
I love this radio station.
And it is midnight. You're tuned to listener-sponsored, non-commercial WBAI in New York. 99.5 FM, streaming at WBAI.org. Time to dive on in to the dustbin of history.
Wonderful people overnight. I think Max Schmieg is brilliant, and Arpo Martin is brilliant, but I don't know how many people get to hear them. And I want to say thanks. It's a tremendous job.
Well, thank you very much for that.
I can't do it. We'll do it live. No. We'll do it live! Fuck it! Do it live! I'll write it, and we'll do it live! Thing sucks.
Shepherd, Lost Episode. This one is called Hypnotize the Sales Staff. It's once again from the Gary Hines Collection, original broadcast on WOR, May 8th, 1963. So let's hear Lost Gene Shepherd, not available anywhere, but right here in the dustbin of history, WBAI, New York.
You feel unloved, surrounded by hostile forces. Great breaking seas allowed to crash over the tiny barkentine that you are attempting to pilot to the never, never land of paradise. Huh? That tiny, tiny cockle shell, that little ship that is constantly seeping water from every seam, the better to practice your caulking practices, eh? 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 Pedro Leone of Cuba set out from Las Palmas, Canary Islands, Spain, Wednesday to cross the Atlantic in a barrel. Bound for his homeland, Havana, Cuba. Beside him were his provisions of 2 bottles of water, 2 loaves of bread, and 2 pounds of cornmeal. He sailed 2 yards, turned over twice, and was picked up by the police.
La, 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 Pedro Leone. Oh, Pedro, we salute. Oh, Pedro,
oh, beat that thing. He's saying it for all of us. You never can tell. He may have the secret. You just can't afford to miss any trick. Don't step on any cracks. Reminds me of that ad out of one of the Long Island newspapers. Select now for Father's Day delivery, Woodbridge Monument Works.
Happy Father's Day.
Gift wrap. Diners Club cards. Honor. Why don't you speak up? I mean, get that stuff out of your mouth and speak up. It, you know, it reminds me, you know, speaking of great ads, the little things are in the wind, a little, it's like the other day, I'm listening to this ad, and it's on this rotten rock and roll station, one of the saddest ads I've ever, this is a terrible station, where they're going, the announcer's going like mad, he's talking about nothing but the weather and the temperature, and his big hit record, and he's going on real fast, and the biggest production, of course, on the station is the station break itself. You know, this kind of a station, see. Well, in the middle of it all, he starts to do a commercial. And he says, of course, he said, you should always have around your house this wonderful painkiller. For example, if Dad cuts his hand on that antique weather vane, or Mother cuts her fingers on those wonderful vases that she's been putting together, those great vases that she has inherited. I'm sitting out there and cutting your hand on this antique weather vane. Oh, pleasant dreams. Oh, world of joy and salvation. By the way, how are you doing with salvation, incidentally? I mean, how is it working out? mean, you've made all the proper plans. Speaking of proper plans, somehow it's connected. There's this ad for this whiskey. And it's a whiskey that is advertised as, are you ready for the music in there, Eddie? It's advertised as a sensible whiskey with a sensible proof at a sensible price. Somehow I can see this guy laying there in the doorway, and he's got a sensible bun on. And he's wearing sensible shoes, of course. Oh, beat that thing, Daddy. Oh, we're living in scary times. Very scary times. Eddie, reset the scary music because we have a scary thing here. All ready for it in there? Okay. It's funny how the scariest things are presented with the sound of Mantovani's violins playing behind, and everybody thinks they're great things. Stand by for a scary thing. There are a few things happier than the throwaway magazines that appear with the Sunday newspapers. This Week, Parade, other newspapers of that ilk. They feature what they call upbeat articles. Typical upbeat article. Parade, April 28th, 1963. Man marches on. My God. Hypnosis. How it ended the boss's worries. Last fall, the United Wholesale Building Supply Company here in Plainfield, New Jersey, scratched its corporate head. The firm, which sells a variety of products to home builders, had added a sliding mirror door to its line. In the language of showbiz, it bombed. United's 38-man sales force sold only 3 doors in 3 months. I tried spiffs, bonuses for salesmen, premiums to customers, a dishwasher if they purchase 2 doors, discounts, anything to make the unit move, says Edwin C. Goldstein, United Sales Manager. Nothing worked. While United wrestled with its dilemma, the firm's president, Milton Valinsky, found himself undergoing dental treatment. The dentist, Dr. Hyman Toby, hypnotized Valinsky so that he could become less anxious about anesthesia. Some dentists and physicians use hypnosis, psychological relaxation, routinely. It took him only 10 minutes to hypnotize me, Valinsky recalls. He kept telling me my eyes would get heavy. Then he said my arms would get heavy. He gave me a little Novocaine and went to work. No pain. It was a pleasure. After he came out of the trance, Valinsky joked to Mr. Toby, I wish you could hypnotize some of our salesmen. They need it. He repeated his little joke to sales manager Goldstein. Goldstein, in the true American tradition, got an inspiration. Light bulb lighting over Goldstein's head. Surprise. Like in the Jigs cartoons, you know? If hypnosis can help dental patients, why not salesmen? Let's try it.
Dear Vin.
Dr. Toby met with the entire United sales force and explained hypnosis. A number of salesmen agreed to be placed in a trance. Dr. Toby hypnotized them. Then he read a prepared statement extolling the merits of the mirror doors, reciting a list of rules for sound salesmanship and suggested that each salesman should approach customers with, quote, warmth, friendliness, enthusiasm, and creative imagination. Which he will, of course, muster totally via his own creative, hypnotized inner spirit. In addition, Dr. Toby told his hypnotized audience that when they emerged from the trance, they would have no trouble remembering how to sell, how to sell, how to sell, how to sell, how to sell the product. Thank you. Tickled pink, the men charged out on the street. The results were staggering. The heck are you doing? Within 2 weeks, three United salesmen alone, three alone, sold 33 doors. The others sold 57 more. By last spring, the salesman had unloaded 132 doors, and Goldstein was rushing to the phone to reorder 150 new units. Like madmen, they rushed from door to door, pounding, hammering, and selling. Tickled Pink United plans to have its entire sales force hypnotized again in the near future. All I did, says Dr. Toby modestly, all I did was, well, to help the men understand their own potentials. Eyes are getting heavy. Your arms are getting heavy, oh listener. Your eyeballs are beginning to bug. Look right here at me. Look at me and my little field coil now. Look at your little transistor radio. You see that little light? Now look carefully. You're getting sleepy. You are a magnificent human being. You have high cheekbones. You are 6'7". You are tall and thin and angry. You are tall in the saddle. Do you hear me? You are tall in the saddle. Gary Cooper had nothing that you don't have in space. Your eyes are getting heavy. Your arms are getting heavy. Your stomach is flat. Like a washboard and hard as a rock. You are a first baseman. You feel supple muscles. You can now feel all of them. You can hit 452. Get out. Get out. Get up off your duff and move. March. March. Go down and talk to Casey tonight. Go on. Go after Ralph. I'll tell him you want to play center field tomorrow morning. You can do it. You're fantastic. Yes. So. Baby. Your arms are getting heavy. Your eyes are closing. You don't have pimples anymore. You don't have that little roll of suet that hangs out all over everywhere. Your teeth are straight, baby. You are a magnificent creature. You are, in fact, what Audrey Hepburn has been trying to be for years. You are talented and beautiful. You hear me? And all the world is waiting for you.
Can you hear that? And when you wake up, you will remember how to be Ethel Merman. I will read you now a few simple rules pertaining to magnificent success in the theater. And you will never forget them. One, kill the rotten son of the guns. Disembowel all of them. Break their necks. The only thing that counts is you. Keep saying this over and over again. Me, 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 me. I'm magnificent. Hear that? Keep repeating this over and over again. Now you are ready to go out and be a beautiful, loving, wonderful human creature whom John Chapman will absolutely be gassed over because of the magnetic, wonderful, beautiful, warm personality that you have. But remember, you've got to be hard as steel, stainless steel. No stains on thee. Right? There. Speaking of the hypnotized, this is WOR, FM New York. Like to, you know, make a little poll among the home there, the people there with the lawnmowers and stuff, and find out how it worked out. I mean, everything. Of course, we admit that the doors were sold, but wow. You know, speaking of that, I guess salesmen do, in a way, do literally get hypnotized in the world that they live in. It is very hard to actually believe when you are a salesman in what you're selling, just the way it is. And I'll never forget one of the wildest scenes that I ever saw. A friend of mine, I'm going to describe the scene. This friend, this was back in the Midwest, and it's funny, this could be called a moment in actual education. This is the educational program for this week, and is will appear on the exam later. This is an exam program. And if you wish to take notes, we will not wait for you while you take notes, but you're free to do so, any of you who wish to take notes, because this is liable to appear. This will not be true and false. However, this will be an essay question if it does appear on the exam. Well, I was at one point, it was very hard to believe it. At one point, my eyes were bright and clear, and I believed. I was really a true believer. It's very difficult to know when that moment of stopping being a true believer and then becoming a half believer, and then you keep vacillating. You don't really ever stop being one, you know, once you are one. Now, it is true that I have to admit, there's no question about it, that when I look at an old movie and I see Priscilla Lane, well, she is beautiful, pure, and she has a wonderful heart, and I cannot do anything about it. There's no question about it. I try. I keep saying, yeah, but it doesn't work. Now, I can believe what I want to believe about the little old friendly winemaker, but Priscilla Lane, no, it just won't work. And anything else that pops up on the old movies, I'm a believer. There's no question about it. I believe me, I'm probably the only guy you know who can get moved to tears by a cartoon on the 5 o'clock cartoon period there when they're, you know, they're selling all the popsicles and stuff. Seriously, I can get involved with Mickey Mouse. So this is truly a true believer. But I was even more of a true believer than I am now, which is a pretty true believer actually now. And there was a period when I didn't know. It was truly like Candide, you know, I guess, going along there. And I kept meeting Dr. Pangloss. Didn't recognize him at the point, but there was this one guy I did meet who was. And I used to go to his house. I didn't know I was bored, you know. Isn't it terrible to live all of your life and not even know you're bored out of your skull? And you're sitting there, and you do notice that there's a funny thing buzzing in your ears once in a while, and your foot goes to sleep occasionally, but you figure that's what life is like. You know, I'm surprised that so many people really do think life is this thing. There is nothing else. It's awful to tell how you break out of the shell, and I'm going to have to admit to you, you know how I broke out of this wild shell? And I'm sure that it happened to a million and one guys, was when the Army came and got me. I'd have been sitting out there telling little jokies to the guys in the mill and worrying about the schedule on the bulletin board. And that was the whole bit, you know, everybody. And guys would go and sit and they'd holler and they'd look at each other and they'd talk and they'd go bawling. And all the while, you didn't know that that buzzing in the ears was not in the neon sign that was going bad over your head. You didn't realize it was your actual head going out of its skull. So I'm sitting there, and my ears are buzzing, and I'm at this guy's house. And he was a real merry type, you know. He sits around, he has doilies on stuff and all that. And he's telling me, he says, you know, he says, I want to take you. And he worked for this great big outfit, this tremendous place. And it was an internationally known company, which you know about. It has its world headquarters here in New York City. And they call it the world headquarters. And he worked for this place that made machines. And their international slogan is in one word. Just one solid word, which was the last thing I know now that my friend ever would dare to do. And this is a big word. And he had this word, seriously, it's a funny thing. He had this word hemstitched into his towels. He had it, you know, like it says his and hers, there was a little pink think, and there was a little blue think. And he had it, you know, the little thing that you put on the john, the little thing that goes over the top of it, that little fuzzy thing. It was there in old Romanesque letters, all woven over. And he had a shower curtain that had it done in neoprene, which was waterproof, and it had little fishes spelling out in formation that wonderful word. And he had, it was all down the line. This is the kind of life in. And I didn't question at the time because, you know, there's a time when you believe this kind of stuff. So I'm over at his house one night and he says to me, we're sitting there eating and we're having the roast beef and we're having the good little red wine and all that. And my ears are buzzing and his ears are buzzing apparently, although apparently his ears never stop buzzing. Apparently now they're buzzing even louder because he's a VP. So we're sitting there and he says to me, Shep, why don't you get a real job? See, I was in radio and television. He says, why don't you get a real job? Well, of course, I went for the bait. Because everybody who's doing anything that is remotely attached to that strange little fugitive cloud of imagination, like guys that are painters, guys that are writers, guys that are artists, guys that are actors, they always have a vague feeling that they're cheating. They always have a sneaking sensation that one day somebody's going to come up and tap them on the shoulder. Okay, it's all over. Okay, come on, over to the office now. Let's go. Come on, I'm Mac here. Fill out the forms. Let's go. You're going to the accounting department. And you will know that, like Kafka, you will know that they have come to the right man. You are guilty. And you better go. So when he said, why don't you get a real job at the plant? Well, now, you know, I don't know anything about that. And I'm not a very good thinker. And he said, well, look, you can learn. And the reason I am bringing this up, and here it was insane. Have you ever been invited to dinner to somebody's house and realize it's a setup? Like somebody wants you to meet this girl somebody wants you secretly to be introduced to somebody else who's going to be there, like the boss or some jazz like that. You get the funny sensation, you know, like it's all sets all around you and you're playing on a scene and somebody's written script. He says, well, Marge and I were talking the other day. And we think that it's time for you to settle down. Well, I still had the crease on the back of my neck from my tin hat. You know, that kind of thing. And you know, settle down. And, you know, wow. And he says, we would like you to settle down. And I want to invite you to something very special. What? Well, he said, you know, the big man in our company, TJ himself, is going to be speaking at our regional sales meeting. He is coming. That's in capital letters. He is coming. Well, that's all in capital letters. He is coming to speak at our big regional sales meeting. And I can't tell you but how thrilled all of us are. Well, it was said in such a way that I was thrilled. You know, it was when you're in the presence of actual reverence, even though you don't know what is being revered, you feel it. I don't know how to explain it. I remember one day I'm in Nigeria and I'm walking through this village and these guys are hitting tom-toms and yelling and hollering and burning things and shouting and throwing leaves up in the air. And all of a sudden I had the feeling that I was in the presence of something important. And I felt like it. I wanted to jump right in the middle of the crowd and start hollering, rattling teeth and skulls and stuff because, you know, it was important. So I'm sitting there and he says, I want you to come to this thing. I said, okay, fine. He said, well, it's going to be held in the auditorium over at the music hall. And it's just for the salesman, and we can bring one guest. Now, I talked about bringing Marge, and Marge has been to two of these events, and she said that she'd prefer to have you go. Well, you can't turn that down. And so that night, I arrived, and I thought, well, you know, it's going to be fantastic. It's going to be a big thing to see this man, to see the focal point of it all. That's in caps, too. And I had the vague feeling that I wanted to get involved, too. There's a terrible thing, you know, about totalitarian things. They attract. They really do. I suspect that we all want to erase ourselves with some kind of eraser, you know. We all want to get into the thing. We all vaguely want to have a uniform. It's a vague thing about uniforms, and I don't know quite what it is. I don't know. So I arrived that night, and it's an exciting night. You know, the kind of exciting night where you feel the electricity in the air, and there are guys at the door there greeting each other and shaking hands, and they all look very clean, and they're wearing white shirts, and they're dark suits, and they have dark ties, and their hair, everybody has a fresh haircut, you just know it. Everybody's looking fresh, and fresh shaves, and their eyes are sparkling, and I'm there with my suit that I got at Bonds, my dark blue suit, and I got my dark blue tie on, and I got my pink shirt, you know, and I'm all jazzed up, I'm ready, and I've got my new shoes on from Tom McCann. We're all shaking hands and everybody's ready. And it was exciting, you know. The cars are driving up, and it was one of those warm spring nights. I was reminded of it tonight, as a matter of fact, coming in. It's warm, soft, and a spring, verdant, fertility. Everything is growing, and human hopes are growing. It's all beginning to grow. It's beginning to move upwards and upwards. And there's just a feel of warmth in the air. Anything, Eddie, just put it on. Thank you. There we go. Always the argument. Warm, you know, and it's warm, it's soft, and I, you know how when you see people pulling up in front of some place where they're having the big opening, have you ever been to a first night? You know the excitement of a first night? You know what I'm talking about? When the big cars are pulling up and people are getting out? Well, it was just wildly exciting. And I'm there in line, and everybody's, and what was so great was when I came up to the doorway, apparently this guy had told all of his buddies about me. He's bringing me, and he had probably suggested to them that I can become one of them. And we arrive at the door, and this guy says, oh, you're Shep. For God's sakes, you're Shep, aren't you? And I said, yeah. He said, good to see you, fella. And he puts his thing up there, and the old meat hook, and clamps it down on my shoulder, you know, the great big hunk of padding I get in. I can hear the padding crumpling. He says, how are you, fella? And he grabs a hold of me there. And, you know, it was fellowship. It was warm. It was honest and real. And those blue eyes looked right into me. And the guy who was with me, Clifford, says, you know, there's a swell bunch of guys, Shep. This is Harold. And I says, hi, Harold. How are you? He says, Shep, it's good to meet you. I've heard you, Shep. And we're shaking hands and hollering. I could hear all the guys waiting behind coming in. And in through the doorway, you could see all the people are filing down and sitting in their dark suits. And there is that wonderful atmosphere, the theater. It's all there. There's an excitement in the air. Well, I go in through the doorway, and they're exchanging these little engraved cards and talking. And you could see it's one group. And they all, oh, hey, for God's sake. Oh, look, it's Charlie. Hey, Charlie. He's from the Cleveland office. Hey, Charlie. How are things going up in Cleveland? Hi, son of a gun. I've been seeing the figures. Don't be modest, you old clown, you. hey, there's Max from Salt Lake. Hey, Max. Oh, hey, man. Oh, and I'm sitting there, and it was the first time in my life I was with people who loved each other, really loved each other. You know, they're running back and forth up in the aisles and hitting and hollering, and I'm being introduced to all of them, Max, Charlie, Fred, Murphy, all the whole crowd, and they're all sitting with the suits and all, and it's warm in there. It's really warm. It's reaching out and grabbing me, and somewhere in the background, somebody is playing an organ. I can hear it. You know, it's a little Hammond organ. It's playing cocktail sort of music. You know, it was added to the warmth. They didn't have any glasses, but everything was there but the glasses. You know, it was all there. It was heady, and guys were looking a little drunk and everything. Everybody was so pleased, and it was wonderful. Well, we all filed in. We had seats. Everybody had assigned seats, and we sat down. And my friend, of course, was one of the outstanding star salesmen. So we're way up near the front there on the aisle, and we're sitting there. And it was one of these auditoriums, you know, with the cushioned seats, the red plush. And we're sitting in. Very exciting. And it really is exciting. And you can hear the guy playing back on. And you can hear the guys humming. A few guys are singing snatches of song. And it's just a wonderful warmth. Hardly any women there. All men. All have come from all over, you know, they're bringing their buddies and everything. It's like an old lodge meeting. And then the house lights dim. There's a hush. We're waiting. Well, I don't think there are many things more exciting in life than that moment when we're waiting for whatever is about to happen to happen. I think this is more exciting in the theater than the theater itself. Just sitting there, that expectation, that wonderful anticipation. Well, we're sitting there. The house lights dim. And then the curtain parts just a little bit, and there's a gold light behind there. It's lit up behind the stage, and these mauve curtains move back a little bit. And a guy steps out in front, and he's a tall, thin man with gray, wavy hair. And immediately there is a tremendous, it's just like Ethel Merman has come out, you know. There is a tremendous wave of exaltation and an enormous surge of recognition. And this great roar of applause, you know, there's just tremendous, and I'm applauding wildly like everybody else. And he's looking down at us, and he looks like Lewis Stone. And he says, fellas, I want to greet you, and I want to say that it's always a pleasure to be here. And as you all know, we have a very, very special event in store for us tonight. And all of us who were responsible for putting together this program for the Central Sales Convention know that all of you have been looking forward to this event the past few months and have been invited here because of your records. As you know, all the salesmen on our staff were not invited. Each one of you are here because of your sales record. Each one of you are here because of your actual achievements. You are not here because of any idle talk, any loose gossip next to the water cooler. No, that's a little funny. Everybody laugh. Apparently, idle gossip next to the water cooler is a big thing in the company. No, fellas, you're here because of what you did on that sales chart. Well, tonight we're here for fun. We're not going to talk about business. We're here to get to know each other better, to understand each other. And if you, the chief is going to hear himself. Well, here I thought this is the chief at least, you know. Well, it wasn't the chief at all. This was apparently one of the assistant chiefs, like the regional sales manager whom everybody knew. And I recognize good theater when I knew it, because you see what he's doing. He's preparing for the entrance. And I want all of you fellows now to reach around before we do anything else. Just reach behind you, reach ahead of you, and reach next to you. And I want you to take the man's hand next to you, and I want you to shake it. I want you all to know each other before we go any further, because there's a lot of you fellows have been added to the staff since our last meeting, and a lot of you haven't been able to get together in years. And I want you all to get there and shake. Well, with that, everybody turns and starts to shake hands. I hadn't had such a scene since I left the Southern Baptist Church one summer. That was a long story. Well, anyway, everybody shook hands. They turned and shook hands, and I'm shaking hands with the guy next to me, and I'm shaking hands. Everybody's shaking hands in front. You hear this great wave of fellowship and good cheer just rolling over the audience. And I can only tell you that I was feeling wonderful. It ain't like that in radio. Let me tell you, Ted Malley does not smile when I come in. I'm going to be perfectly honest with you. And it's just that way. Eddie bristles the minute I walk into the studio. And it's been that way all the way through. Nobody loves anybody in the theater. Forget it. There is no business like show business. You're right. That's right. You hear that, Berlin? You should know better than anybody. All right. So this is just the way it is, you know. And I love this. These guys are hitting each other, you know, and they're shaking hands, and everybody is sweating through the suits. You know, it's hot in there. It's springtime. And then without any warning, he says, and now let's sing all together now. Let's sing number one, fellas. Well, with that, there was a tremendous wave of applause, and behind the scenes, I hear this organ start. The old organ starts to play. Oh, one, two, three. We think all day, we think all night, we think all day for TGO. TJ, TJ is our man. TJ, TJ is... Well, these guys are singing about thinking, and they're singing about TJ. Well, you'd be surprised, within 30 seconds, I am belting it out louder than anybody. I can feel my eyeballs popping, I'm sweating, I'm hollering, and I'm yelling about thinking. Well, these guys are all, and I'm digging the whole thing, you see. Well, we finish singing the company song, and everybody's sitting on the edge of their seats. And I know it's about to happen. The house lights go even darker, there's a long pregnant pause, and the curtain goes back. And this man, this tall, gray-haired man, gets what I can only describe, well, almost a gothic reverential tone in his voice. So you could hear great echoing vowels going through the nave. You could feel the must of ages and the reverence of all of man's aspirations ringing like tiny silver bells. And now, men, the moment that all of us have been waiting for. And I can only say that I feel deeply honored to be on the same platform with one of the greatest men of our time. And with that, he turned, and a man suddenly darted out of the opposite side of the curtain, pushing ahead of him a little trundle cart. And on the little trundle cart was a $5,000 tape recorder. And as it reached the center stage, the man looked out at us, pressed the button, and a great voice echoed from the loudspeakers that were strategically pointed at every corner of the room. Fellas, I'm very pleased to see you. All of you fellows have been gathered here today because of your outstanding efforts. And I want to say that it is with great humility that I face... And they all sat there with their mouths hanging open, clinging to every word. And it was real. He was really there. He was really, honestly, truly, and all the way there. And it was only at that moment that I began to have a funny sensation. The tape is going around. I see the little reels going past, those little plastic reels. And I see that polyethylene tape going through. And I see those loudspeakers. And in further consideration of the great and overpowering problems that all of us face in this world today, one of them, of course, is the lack of honest understanding between peoples. The honest people-to-people realization that we should all get together. We should all reach out and clasp our hands with our fellow man. And all the while, it's coming out of those loudspeakers. And each man sat next to me and reached out and clasped the man's hand next to him. And I sat, and I began to break out into a strange cold sweat. And finally, the tape reached its climax. And I say to you, as I have said for long years past, as we began in our humble beginnings in the little shop where we first put together our first paperclip, when we first put together our first small file cabinet, and I say, oomph, the tape broke. Ow, ow. There's a brief moment. The guy rushes out. He puts it together. And so I say to you, fellas, go out once again tonight and carry the message. Carry the message to all, to each and every one of you. And I want to say personally to all of you that I'm right behind you, and I love every one of you. Good night. Great tumultuous roar of applause. 20 minutes later, we're sitting in the streetcar on the way home, and he turns to me and he says, isn't he a great guy? By God, it's wonderful to work for a real human being. Well, it was a very interesting world. Yeah, don't worry, baby. It's a very interesting problem, you know. And I think that all of us want to be hypnotized. I do, you know. Oh, speaking of hypnotics, we would like to suggest that you go down to the Mandarin House And, hey, listen, it was very, very peculiar. Do you know I heard somebody talking about Mandarin House on the bus today? This lady said, she says, you know, I went to this restaurant where they have Mandarin food, and it's very, very superb. It is very, very superb, this Mandarin food. Now, personally, I prefer the other kind. But let me tell you, if you want something that's very superb, I would suggest you go to the Mandarin House. Now, it's up there uptown. It's right on the other side of 57th Street, just north of 57th there. But if you want to try something very superb, it's at the Mandarin House. However, I prefer the other kind of Chinese food, you know. I like egg rolls myself. But if you want to try something that's very superb, well, at that point, we reached my stop. Thank heavens. This is the Mandarin House, and it's on 2nd Avenue, just north of 57th Street, and they have a bar, and it is Mandarin food. Try it. We also have with us Random House, Jules Pfeiffer's new book called Hold Me. And it's very difficult to describe Pfeiffer's work, and it is ridiculous to attempt to. I will only say that this is one of the few books I've known that has a spine of pure gelatin. It's a very nervous book. I suspect books like Hold Me, 1,000 years from now, will be prime exhibits when guys are writing, when the future Gibbon is putting together things about what happened to our world and, you know, what was really occurring. And I suspect that 1,000 years from now, if you had a copy of Hold Me, it would be worth $40,000 in mint condition. So if you want to really put yourself in line for a great investment, for $1.95, you go down to Random House or any store where they sell this stuff and ask for Pfeiffer's Hold Me, okay? That title, of course, you realize that the title of this book has to be said properly. Has to be said with a proper... And since we are on the radio and there are kids and all kinds of things listening, I can embarrass everybody. Speaking of that, are you capable of true embarrassment? Are you really? Would you like me to... Let's try an experiment here in direct communications. Let's try some direct communication. Just one brief moment of silence here. Hmm? What would you most like to... What one word would you most like to hear me say on the radio? Okay. It's going to be that way. Is it really going to be that way? Is that the kind of rotten person you are? Really, is it? Is it really? Is that the kind of person that I'm dealing with every night here? Is that the kind of rotten, weak-kneed, gelatin-spined fish that I'm dealing with every night, huh? With a dirty, rotten, crummy, cactus-spine-covered mind? I don't need this. I'm much finer than this. I'm much bigger than all of this. I don't need this kind of shoving around. You know, you're getting this free. You're not paying anything. That's why you're so smart about it. You go to spend $40 to see Mary Martin yell around on the stage and you think it's great. That's why. You're getting this free. Anything you get free, you start looking the mouth. You're looking the gift horse in the mouth. Well, look out, Daddy. I don't have to fool around with you. You're going to have to pay one day. Love it.
Oh,
Yeah, we got some hypnotism songs. We just don't have time to play them because the dustbin of history has come to a conclusion. That was Gene Shepherd from the Gary Hines collection from, I believe, this very day in history. Am I correct? May 8th? All right, not until tomorrow. Okay, but May 8th, 1963. Hypnotize the sales staff. That's it. We'll be back next week with one of the few remaining Hall of Fantasy shows, another Weird Circle, more Lost Gene Shepherd, and Sunday night, Golden Age of Radio, 8 until 10. Coming up very shortly, the Jimmy Dore Show. That was Monty DeVideo with Hypnosis, and this is Split Ends with Hypnotize. Good night. Your curator and janitor, Matt Schmid, signing off.